Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California, with Andy Stevens, Owen Main, and Luke Johnson.
Hot stuff.
What's up, guys? Hey, this is Luke Johnson here at the Fansmanship.com podcast, sitting here with Owen Main and Andy Stevens. Say hi, guys.
What's going on? Happy New Year.
It's nice to be back. We have not podcast since the 18th of December. I hope you guys had a nice Christmas and a Happy New Year.
It's been like 3 or 4 weeks.
It's been a long time, so we got a lot to talk about tonight. We're going to begin here with the NFL playoffs. If you guys haven't seen, the Tebow won again.
Tim Tebow. So he's
now
the Tebow?
He's the Tebow. He is 3-0 now in overtime play and a 29-23 upset of the Steelers. It was phenomenal.
First play of overtime.
And then we also had a surprising blowout of the Falcons 24-2 by the Giants.
Yeah, how did Matt Ryan not get a...
I don't know.
A point? I know they went for it on fourth
Can
twice.
We stop calling him Matty Ice now, at least for a while? I mean, he's what now, 0-3?
Yeah.
In the playoffs. And he had good players.
And I saw a really interesting article written once about, you know, there's this whole love of Matt Ryan, and then why isn't Joe Flacco getting love? And Flacco's got a much better record in the playoffs. So, interesting.
I'm a big Flacco fan. We'll talk a little more about that.
And on to the NBA. We're going to hit the NBA. Start the season here, this condensed season. Miami's looking good. They're on fire, although Dwayne Wade and LeBron James have been hurt for a few games here this past week. Chris Bosh hit a big three. Basically on his own and won that game. So we'll talk about the Heat, their hot start.
We'll also talk about
the Dallas Mavericks and their horrible start. Championship hangover pretty much puts it lightly. They're what, probably about 2-8. I'll look up their record.
They're four and five.
They're not doing very well.
They're four and five, but
they've been blown out by most teams. You know, most of playoff like teams. So
yeah, and Odom doesn't seem to be helping him very much. He's kind of very quiet and
Odom
taking a back seat again.
He looks like he isn't in his, you know, in tip-top shape. He doesn't look that good when I watch him play with Dallas.
You don't think he took care of himself over the...
No.
He thinks he's still on the Lakers. Mentally, at least.
I know I digress, but one player who didn't take care of himself was Samuel Dalembert on the Rockets.
Well, he's just lucky to be on an NBA roster.
Yeah, but no, he's a starter. He's a starting center.
But we'll hit that. We'll also hit on the Lakers. And moving on, we will...
We also are going to be talking a little bit about Cal Poly. The basketball team, the men's and women's teams, are in the Big West play after a slow preseason start. The women's team is doing a little better in the Big West. We'll talk about that. The men's team had a rough week, three games against the top three other schools in the Big West. Poly was preseason number three. Fullerton was number four. They played UCSB at home, went to Long Beach State. They lost both of those games in pretty close fashion, kind of last minute, either last minute shot or they missed some free throws. Both really tough losses.
Santa Barbara loss was a heartbreaker, huh?
Oh, that was rough. That was rough. They came back and took care of Fullerton. They went on an 18-0 run in the first half, and Chris Eversley really paced them, had 18 points and 9 rebounds with center Will Donahue on the bench with a sore Achilles. So we'll talk a little bit about that. And it's a big day here at Fansmanship on the podcast because we have our first in-studio guest.
Our first in-studio guest.
Well, if you count Jesse, I mean, he's just, what, a fantasy baseball analyst slash good
Jesse
friend.
Slash fill-in, yeah. We have a real actual guest.
Our first legit guest, I guess.
We have J.D. Scroggin from the San Luis Obispo Tribune, and he'll be joining us next segment to talk about all things Cal Poly and local sports. So stay tuned, hang with us, Fansmanship.com podcast on Fansmanship.com.
We'll be back.
Let me guess, you're that Dungeons & Dragons champion whose parents forced into a sport of their choice. If so, then Put Me In Coach, an interactive 4D sport dance workout gaming experience by legendary dance queen Richard Simmons is the perfect thing for you.
Now kick and jump and kick and jump and catch the pass and tackle and shoot and kick and jump and catch the pass. All right, way to go, team.
The fourth dimension is
fabulous.
It will take you from Pine Sitter to Sideline Star
two-stepping sideline grooves that will even make the dance team resent you. The king of building self-confidence has joined forces with the legendary Pine Rider Chutke Atkins to develop this once-in-a-lifetime program. For a limited time, you'll receive a sweat-stained Glitter Simmons wig, flashing clip-on nipple piercing, and pink or purple tanning thong for absolutely free. This is good while supplies last. To order, log on to www.putmeincoach@richardsimmonsfabulous4dimensions.com.
If it worked for Tim Tebow, it'll work for you too.
Hi, my name's Chucky Atkins, and I approve this message.
Welcome back to the Fansmanship.com podcast. Owen Main, Andy Stevens, and Luke Johnson. Guys, where'd this music come from?
I don't know. What is this?
Who picks this stuff?
I don't know. I can't hear it.
Andy is headphoneless today. We want to bring in now our guest, J.D. Scroggin from the San Luis Obispo Tribune. J.D., how's it going?
Welcome. Thanks, guys. Good to be here.
Hey, so I want to kick it off by talking to J.D. today about Cal Poly Hoops. And J.D.'s been the – he can tell us he's been the college beat writer for the Tribune for 3 years now.
I started in 2008. That was my first season, the football season of 2008, and then the basketball season 2008-2009, so since then.
Great. So I wanted to get J.D.'s impressions on the early part of the season for the Cal Poly men's basketball team. J.D., they're now 10-6 and 1-2 in the Big West. Tell me a little bit, just kind of off the top, your impressions of Coach Calero's team this season.
Well, they had their best as a program. They had their best non-conference season that they've had since I've been covering the team. They usually, you know, don't have a winning record at the end of the non-conference season going into conference, and they did this year. They were on pace throughout the non-conference season to have their best record, you know, since they've been at Division I, basically. So it was a very successful non-conference season for them. Now they're into conference. You know, this first week has just concluded. They're 1-2. They were hoping to go at least 2-1 to show that they were real deal contenders for the Big West championship. They're not out of it at 1-2. Obviously, there's a lot. There's another rotation and the rest of the first rotation to go. But you can still get back in it by the end of the season as long as they're in the Big West tournament. Technically, they're not out of it, and they can contend for the automatic berth.
And how does that format work for the tournament? Do all the teams get in, or is it top what?
Top eight, right?
Top eight.
Or do the 8 and 9 play against each other for a play-in?
No, the top eight get in, but the interesting thing this year is that CSUN has been punished by the NCAA for academics, APR numbers, I believe, and then they're out of the postseason. So, okay.
So Northridge is out, and so everybody will make it this year, 1 through 8. And so, like you said, it's really all about, and Calero said this the other day, it's really all about how they're playing those last three games of the season. And it's a point I made to Luke, I think, the other day, is that they're not going to get an at-large bid. Even if they would have won all three games this week, Pauly's not looking at an at-large bid for the tournament. So the way that they're going to make the tournament is to win their last three games and to get, as Calero says, get better.
I don't think you want to use it as an excuse. Oh, you know, we just want to win, you know, be hot at the end and, you know, hit the tournament. You know, you want to win those games and prove that you can win those games,
sure,
right?
Sure.
It's not just let's just coast and until the end and then see if we can turn it on. So
exactly.
But it was some tough competition.
Luke, I know you had some thoughts on Cal Poly and the men's basketball.
Yeah, you know, this is the first year that I've been able to watch, I think, Cal Poly ball quite
since,
a bit.
Since
Varney Dennis, exactly. Dropping 18-10 for Cal Poly. You know, this is the first year where I've really watched a lot of Cal Poly basketball. And at first, I was all about the hype. I thought this team is fantastic. And I do think that, you know, like J.D. said, compared to years past, this team is good. Calero has changed the chemistry. There is an expectation that they can win night in, night out. But I do have an issue still. I mean, just because this is Cal Poly, San Luis Obispo, doesn't mean that I'm going to go easy on them. All I see is loss against every team that's worthy on their resume. Lost to UNLV. Okay, fine. UNLV is a great team. Lost to St. Mary's. Lost to DePaul. Lost to UCSB. Lost to Long Beach. Held on when Cal State Fullerton had a nice little ride there in the second half to nearly bring that back to a tied ballgame.
It was never that close.
Knocked off USC in a very low-scoring game. I don't know if that would happen again now. I don't know if they would actually beat USC now. So, you know, 10-6, fantastic, great. But
you're saying they still haven't taken that next step yet that people are kind of starting to talk about.
I like what Coach Calera was doing with this team. I think that there is an expectation, like I said, to win night in, night out. I do see an intensity that I've never seen, I think, from Cal Poly basketball. But they just can't score. I mean, this team can't score, period. Does anybody have a take on that? I mean, they cannot score.
Can I mention that's my baby crying in the background? Can I just say that just to get rid of the elephant in
that
the
wasn't,
room?
Wait, hold on. That wasn't Calero crying when I was just saying all that?
No, that was my three-month-old baby. Wow. Do you have a drop for
Andy, that was incredible.
Maybe you can add that to the drops. I think that's fair criticism of Cal Poly and Calero because of this week. Had they come out and gone 2-1 or swept 3-0 this week, beat Long Beach or beat UCSB in one of those games that were pretty close, I mean, towards the end, it'd be a different story. You'd say, okay, well, they've proven they can beat one of the top two teams. They're definitely in contention. They didn't get that done. So I think that's opened up the door for you know, people who are fans or spectators of the program to say, well, hey, you guys didn't get it done.
Do you think they're built for right now, or are they kind of building towards something bigger here towards the next couple of years? Is this kind of an end all, or is it something down the road? I haven't even looked at their roster. I don't know how young the team is overall.
They're definitely built for right now, because if you look at their starting lineup, Amari Furman Sr., Will Taylor Sr., those are two of their top contributors.
Hansen
right now.
David Hansen Sr.,
yeah. Coming off the bench, Will Donahue Sr., Jordan Lewis Sr. They have a lot of seniors, and they're losing a lot of production this year after this season. So this is the year that they have to get it done. The sad thing about it is everyone looks at their roster and say, man, this is a great Cal Poly team, the best Poly team that Calero's had, and maybe the best team they've had in 4, 5, 6 years. But you've got Long Beach State and UCSB with their best teams that they've seen in this
really?
Probably the same
time
span.
All right, wow.
And what you're saying earlier as far as if you'd beaten Long Beach and Santa Barbara, maybe we're talking differently about them. What a difference 10 seconds of defense makes as far as the perception, right? I mean, you talk about Orlando Johnson knocking down a three-pointer, and when I say knocking down, I mean hitting the front of the rim, hitting the back of the rim, hitting the side of the rim, and dropping in, and then losing to Long Beach when you have the lead in the second half. On a few plays, it's a few plays here and there. What a difference a few plays really make, right?
Yeah, I mean, this has been a trend. I mean, you look back last year when that horrible loss to UCSB last year and that little floater at the end.
And deja vu this year.
Deja vu this year. And, you know, last year's game to me is sort of metaphorical for where this team is at now. I think Calera, like I said, is changing the chemistry, but maybe his players aren't yet responding totally to this expectation that we can be, you know, dominant, you know, in the Big West, right? Possibly a March tournament team.
And here's my question. This is this senior class now. Calero didn't recruit Royer either, right? And Royer's the only junior, right? But all the sophomores this year he recruited, and Furman and Taylor, obviously. But, you know, moving forward now, you're really looking at every year the team with more and more being more and more reflective of Calero's personality. You look at 2 years ago, you know, Lorenzo Keeler was a good point guard. You know, Sean Lewis was a great two guard. But those guys aren't necessarily and they played great for Calero, but they weren't guys that Calero recruited. They're not kind of the hard-nosed, tough-minded recruits that you see him getting. My big question is big men, JD. You said they're losing Taylor, they're losing Donahue. Eversley played some five, but he's really more of a 3-4 kind of swing forward.
Right.
What's their plan for the future as far as...
Is there a Dennis in our future?
Is there a Dennis? Or a Donahue or a Taylor? I mean, those guys are both JC transfers, right? They lost 2 6'11", you know, tall, skinny drinks of water this offseason. What's their plan for the future down low?
Well, I want to preface this by saying that in the Big West, you don't need the 6'10", 6'11", 7 foot. It's nice if you have those guys. I mean, look at UCSB. They're happy to have a 7'2 guy on their squad. But, you know, you can get by with 6'8", 6'9", and guys that are 6'6", and you can call them 6'8", and 6'9". Mm-hmm. And Cal Poly's got, for the next recruiting class, they've got a 6'10 forward from Chicago, forward center, he'll probably play center, named Brian Bennett, who is a kind of husky guy, but, you know, Calero has challenged him to lose some weight.
He takes up space.
Yeah, but, I mean, I saw some video of him. He's got some good footwork. He's a good passer. He has got some game. It's not like he's just going to come in and be like a dopey country boy tripping over his own feet. He's got some game. He's got some skills. So he'll probably contend for playing time right away. Other than that, then you drop down to like a couple 6'7" guys that they got. One is Zach Allman from Mission. I don't know if you guys have seen him play. Then they've got a guy who was not redshirting this year, but he went to a prep school in Wisconsin named Joshua Hall from Washington. He's 6'7". He's a little bit thinner. But they've compared him to David Hansen. They've compared Allman to David Hansen. So those are probably your guys down low that are coming in next recruiting class, unless they get somebody else. They've also got Joel Awich, who's redshirting this year. He's about 6'7", too.
And with five seniors, what else does their recruiting class look like? Or is there anybody else that's kind of committed at this point?
Those names that I just ran through are the guys that are coming in that I know of. But they could sign another one or two. You know, when they're also getting Reese Morgan, he's not, I know he's not down low, but it's looking more and more likely that he might not play this year. But you're getting him next year. That'll be like having a new recruit. So it's those guys that I mentioned, the Bennett, Allman, Hall, Awich, who's redshirting. But none of them are, you know, ready to step in right away and be Will Taylor, be David Hansen. There's going to be a void there, definitely.
Even to be Will Donahue, I think, you know, the solid rock in the middle.
So next year kind of be that transition year. You see it that way?
It's possible. Yeah. I mean, they're going to have and the funny thing about this year, and I've been talking about it with a few people, is the guard play. And they just have such a glut of talented guards, but guys who have specialties, right? So Furman's obviously, you know, a senior point guard who acts like one. But beyond him, we're talking about Royer, who can shoot but is undersized and, you know, probably not quite as quick defensively as they want him to be. You have Malik Love, the sophomore, who is fast and athletic. But if the tempo is not up tempo, and if he's not able to post up effectively from the guard position, isn't shooting a lot of outside jumpers.
How was Royer doing too out of Morro Bay? Didn't he have that hot start where he was shooting like about
over 50%?
Two, like, out of every three from beyond the arc there for a while.
Well, I mean, I know until two games ago he was ranked fourth in the nation.
The St. Mary's game was when it kind of started to turn, right?
I think after last night he's had
UCSB's
11.
Turned, right?
He went 1-for-1 in that game.
I think he's had 11 out of 16 games this year with more than 1 3, and he's had at least 1 3-pointer in 17 straight. Thanks to Chris Giovanetti for that one. And that goes back to the last game of last year. So every game this year he's made at least 1 3, which is great. But you talk about losing something probably on defense and rebounding and athleticism when Royer's in the game. You talk about Jamal Johnson, who's a little point guard, little change of pace, but again, kind of a specialty guy, right? You think about who am I leaving out here? Guard-wise, I mean, there's a lot of guards on that team.
Odister.
He doesn't really play guard.
Yeah, Odister's coming back off of injury. And
he can score.
He's a scorer and a shooter. And actually, before he got injured, was probably one of the more well-rounded guards they have. Still kind of coming back as far as his athleticism and so forth. I see Odister.
He'll be needed. Next year, they're going
to
need him.
They're going to have to play three guards next year, at least. all the time, I think.
So Calero has, you know, his work cut out for him. But I wanted to ask JD about Calero, and he was also started covering Cal Poly when the last coach was in Bromley. What was it? Kevin Bromley, was that his name? Mm-hmm. I can't remember his first name. What is the difference that you see between, I mean, you did see Bromley kind of go on his way out, but between how you saw Bromley run his program and how the new coach is now running his program?
Yeah, well, I took over covering the beat during Bromley's final year, and I remember distinctly, I won't forget, you know, the first interview I did with him is I went and did a season preview on the team and asked him about their strategy, what are they going to do that year, and what are they going to focus on. And he basically told me, we're going to shoot a lot. We're going to shoot as much as we can, because the more we shoot, you know, the more chance we have to make shots, and we're going to try and score as much as we can and throw the ball up and let's do it. And that was, I don't know if that, you know, I can't speak
didn't
to
even
the,
cover defense. Or,
no, I can't really speak to the years before that and what their strategy was before that. But that was what he told me, you know, cause it was kind of what their look was. And now you've got Calero in there, and I just think things are a little more organized. He's very detail-oriented. And it's not just with the basketball. I mean, he's detail-oriented in the programs, in, you know, what goes on before the games, with in the meal
road,
tent.
You know, this is when we're eating lunch. Okay? Down to the minute.
I'm the alumni local chapter chair, and he was in the meal tent before the game the other night.
Eating chili?
Absolutely. And you know, he gets into that tent on time before the game, and he goes and talks to people, and I can attest to that. I mean, there's the stuff that Calero does is purposeful, is the word,
right,
I would use for sure.
So would you
sorry to interrupt you.
So you would say it's definitely a different feel as far as detail-oriented, and even the few things that I've noticed, the little things, him having the team go and shake hands with the fans after the game, just trying to be more, you know, personal. Anything else that you'd like to elaborate on that?
Yeah, well, it can be called micromanaging, and sometimes that has a negative connotation, you know, micromanaging, but he's pulling it off. You know, he's micromanaging in a way that works for him, and it's working for the program because you've seen steady improvement year after year.
And do you think that's because he's starting to get more of the right guys for himself? I mean, I had never talked to Eversley before until after the game last night, and you know, every single player that I talked to on that team comes off as really thoughtful and you know, kind of really sharp about basketball, but kind of, you know, easy to talk to. And I mean, it seems like they're the guys he's recruiting are also that way.
Well, they do a lot of work recruiting. You know, I don't know what their recruiting budget is, but it seems to me that it has increased since the Bromley days. Because I always hear, you know, if you follow Coach Calero on Twitter, he's always off recruiting somewhere. I know that his assistant coaches are often away from the team recruiting even during the season. They go on a lot of trips. They talk to a lot of kids, presumably, and they identify who they, you know, think will succeed at Cal Poly, and it seems like they've been doing a good job. We'll see next year, though. We'll see what people are saying next year, because I think that might be a year where it'll be a rebuilding period.
Well, and that's that JC thing, you know, if
definitely
if they're going to get the guy from prep school and everything else, and how much those young guys can contribute. We're going to take a quick break. We still have JD in studio for a couple more segments here.
Talk some women's basketball.
Talk some women's hoops. Talk some
local high school sports. Right?
Local high school sports. Some other local stuff. You're listening to the Fansmanship.com podcast on Fansmanship.com.
So what is Fansmanship.com?
Say what?
We're a sports website by the fans for the fans.
He wants to be a Laker.
For the Central Coast.
Catch the ball.
California.
The sweat-stained glitter Simmons wig.
And beyond.
Tim Tebow.
We love sports. Fansmanship.com. By the fans for the fans.
Flashing clip-on nipple piercing and pink or purple tanning thong for absolutely free.
Yeah. Fansmanship.com. By the fans, for the fans.
What's up, guys? Hey, we're back here. That is Lady Rider you are listening to. A California band from Thousand Oaks. They have some good old school rock and roll sound. And welcome back to the Fansmanship.com podcast. We are here with Owen Main, Andy Stevens, and J.D. Scroggin from the Tribune here in San Luis Obispo.
Got him for one more segment.
One more segment, guys. He's got the baby calling, and, you know, it's time to go on home. But we're just really, you know, grateful he's here. J.D., you know, we want to go ahead and progress here to the women's team over there, Cal Poly, Faith Minmah's team. Also, some high expectations this year. Maybe haven't quite been met, right? They've lost some incredibly close games. We know that.
They didn't win a game the whole month of December. So
the whole month of December, yeah.
Tough.
Obviously some talented players. Give us your early or sort of mid-season, you know, review, so to speak.
Yeah. Can I give a quick baby anecdote real fast?
Absolutely.
Because the baby is crying. I do need to leave. But I just want to say this. I took him on Monday to his first basketball game. It's kind of funny because I told everyone that he was on an unofficial recruiting visit. And we go to the game against UCSB and Cal Poly. Man, and he's in the stands with me, and I'm rocking him in the baby chair, and he's awake, and he's kind of watching the action. Cal Poly gets down by, what, like 10 or 12, something like that at one point, and he just falls asleep, you know, whatever. He's asleep, and I'm rocking him. Cal Poly eventually came back and took the lead. He woke up, and his eyes were just so wide, and Cal Poly was up by one, and I could, it looked like he was just shocked. Like I went to sleep.
What is happening?
I went to sleep, and Cal Poly was down double digits, and now they're winning, and he's just like,
so he was like, into the game.
Right on.
He was like your average fan that, you know.
He's like, what's going on here? And it kind of reminded me of that. Have you seen that commercial, the Chuck Testa commercial? Because it was like, you probably thought that this coyote was alive, and this eagle was alive. No, they're dead. Chuck Testa. They've been stuffed by Chuck Testa. It's kind of reminding me because the baby woke up and he was like, what? Cal Poly, are they alive? Are they going to win? Nope.
Wow. That's cool.
Chuck Testa. Look it up if you haven't seen it. But yeah, to go on Cal Poly women, yeah, their non-conference season, almost opposite to the men, was not glowing. It was not shining. They did not have a good non-conference season. But in the same way the men are still alive, you know, Cal Poly women, they started out 2-0, and they're still the team to beat in the Big West Conference. They still have Christina Santiago. There's still a lot going for them. They weren't going to get the automatic bid anyway. So as long as they're on top in the conference, what they need to do, and they haven't done since they've had Santiago, is
play defense.
They need to cash in the conference tournament. Wow. They made it to the semis, they made it to the finals even one year, but they haven't been able to get over that hump. And if they do, this is the last year they got to do it, kind of like the men. Santiago's a senior. I mean, this is her last go around. This is the team's last chance with her after this season. Are they in for another rebuilding year? Mm-hmm. Just like the men, they might be. So they've got to do it this year.
Well, looking at the schedule here, it looks like between the November 30th loss to Pepperdine and the December 21st loss to San Diego State, they dropped 7 in a row. What would you attribute that to? Were they missing some of their players? Were they just in a funk? What would you say about that and how that may reflect come the end of conference play here?
I don't know how long you guys have been following Cal Poly women's basketball, but pretty much under Faith Mimenaugh since she's been here, and it's been with like 15, 16 years now, something like that, it's been a recurring theme. Every year they have kids go down with injuries, some of them for the season, like Santiago last year missed a year, got, tore a knee in the first game. This year is no different. They've had injuries mainly down low, and I think that's what's kind of hurt them because they've had girls. Abby Bletcher was an all-conference center last year. She did not play any of the early portion of the season because she tore her knee in off-season workouts.
Wow.
Then they also had Brittany Woodard, who's been out down low. Santiago missed some time. She had a sprained ankle. At one point, she went to the hospital. She hit her neck or back or something. I wasn't at that game, unfortunately. I would have loved to have actually seen what happened, so I can only speak from secondhand. But, yeah, they've had injuries, so they're hoping to get everybody back healthy and fresh for the conference play, or at least the stretch run of conference, and then see what happens.
And what do you think about their chances in conference? I mean, who is the team to beat in the conference this year? Are they up there?
Yeah, it's kind of upside down right now. Some of the teams that have been voted or picked by coaches in the media to finish toward the bottom are, in the first week have looked good. Some of the teams who were picked to be in the top half have not looked great. But I think Cal Poly is one that has held true to form. They started out, they've won two. And they're still, I think, with Santiago, the team to beat. I mean, it's that simple. Until mm-hmm. somebody takes them out, they've already beat UCSB, which was a good win for them. They still feel like, I'm sure, that they're the defending champion.
Right.
Now, let me ask you, JD, as we progress here, we're kind of coming into the, the last 10 or 11 games here of the season. It's sort of, make or break time, really. It's time to really prove yourself before a possible run into March. Last year's Big West Player of the Year was Rachel Clancy, and she seemed to bring that toughness to the team defensively. I mean, we all know from watching enough of the girls' team this year that they are sort of a high-octane, offensive team. But, I mean, are they lacking that defensive intensity, you think, to really, solidify themselves as a Big West, superior?
Well, I think they've always been sort of a run-and-gun kind of team. Since I've been covering them, they've always been a we-can-score 70, 80 points a night type of team. But I do think this year they have not played the kind of defense that Faith would have wanted from them, at least so far. So I think there is room for improvement defensively. A lot of it is injuries down low. I mean, it's hard to defend the hoop when your big kids are out. But they've had that problem in the past. They've had the same problem where they've had to play four guards. They can do better, I think, defensively. They've dabbled with some zone this year for the first time
really?
Since I've seen. Yeah, they normally are just a straight man team, But I think they've been so, you know, just not confused isn't the right word, but they haven't played defense the way they wanted to. So they've had to toy with things and like try, you know, they see the men, they do that matchup zone. They're like, oh, maybe we should do that. You know, they're just, they're trying to figure things out because they haven't played the way they wanted to.
They're kind of trying to find out who they are. When you talk about trying to find those things, do you feel like either Calero or Mimna look at the Big West schedule in that way, that it's kind of time to tinker? Obviously, you want to get the best seed you can going into the tournament, but how much tinkering do you think actually goes on within the Big West that's kind of outside what you maybe have to do as you're kind of looking towards the tournament and kind of trying to figure out how to win three games in 3 days?
A lot more tinkering goes on than you'd think because there's so much tape out on both teams. You know, the men's team as well as the women's team. The teams that they're playing against are not only very familiar with their style this year because they've done a lot of they can do a lot of homework on them, but they've played them year after year after year. So it's a constant chess match. You know, what are the little adjustments that you're going to make this year? And in those games where it comes down to a basket, you know, a last second basket, I mean, that can make a difference. So there's a lot of tinkering that goes on. I know Calero tailors their defense toward their individual opponents specifically. So if they're playing Pacific this week, they even change the principles of their defense to mold the team that they're playing against. If they're more of an inside threat, or if they're a 3-point shooting team, they can, you know, they can change their help rules or their switch rules, or you know, who you're going to guard out on the wing kind of rules. And so their defense can change from night to night, and they're constantly tinkering, and they do a lot of film work. The women are the same way. I think they do a lot of analysis as well, and that can't be undersold.
And then, JD, before you have to go, I want to get in this question because I'm sure, you know, there's a lot of fans of Cristina Santiago here locally. Not to progress beyond college basketball, but there are only a few athletes, in my opinion, that come through of late, especially into both the female and the men's programs, that are this good. I mean, 24 points, 12, you know, 10 and a half rebounds a game. She's even shooting 43% from the 3-point line this year. Not only how good is she from a college perspective, in your opinion, but as much as you know, have you heard anything? Are there any projections as far as where she might, you know, land next year? You know, what is her future looking like, if you know anything about that?
I think pre-knee injury, I heard a lot of talk about WNBA. You know, since her sophomore year, basically, Faith has been saying, yeah, she could play in the WNBA. Going into her junior year, everyone was looking at – or going into her senior year, so her first senior year, before she tore her knee, everyone was looking at her stats and saying, oh, she's going to break this record and this record and this record. And it was all about, okay, this year is my showcase year, you know, to open the eyes of any scouts, WNBA, this is what I'm shooting for. Then the knee injury happened. Since the knee injury, it seems like the expectations are more – about Europe, like, you know, let's see what happens in Europe. And she said from the very beginning that every time I've talked to her that she's open to playing in Europe. If WNBA happens, cool. That would be awesome to play at home. But I think she's looking forward actually to playing in Europe and seeing different parts of the world as well.
And then one other question about her. I mean, she's a 6'1 forward or power forward. I mean, she kind of plays that four spot. Even in the girls' game, it's a little undersized. But like I said, she has that improved face-up game. She's hitting 43% from the 3-point line. I mean, how much work have you seen her do compared to like maybe her sophomore or junior year as far as improving that part of her game, you know, that face-up game?
Yeah, well, she can play from the wing. And I think the positive thing that you can take, the silver lining out of an injury when you tear your ACL, you can't run, you can't cut, but you can shoot. And so I know she spent a lot of time in the gym working on jump shot because it's pretty much all you can do when you're rehabbing.
You can practice something, yeah.
So one more question before you go, and maybe there's a lot of one more questions here, but one quick question. A year ago last March, we used to do a weekly thing called What If Wednesday, and it was a what if what about if. Sports. So
What If Wednesday.
You know, what ifs are always kind of fun in sports, yeah. But the what if that I wrote was what if either or both. You know, with the men's team being the 2 seed last year in the tournament, the Big West tournament, the women's team being the 1 seed, what if both of them made the tournament? You know, what would that do to San Luis? And you know, I kind of went back and forth in my mind, even if one of them made the tournament, what would that do to the community or to Cal Poly? I think some people would say, well, you know, San Luis Obispo is a little bit sleepy. what's your impression for what would happen if one or both of those teams made the tournament, and kind of what the reaction would be around town?
It would have to be something that Cal Poly would, you know, move to capitalize on. Their athletic department would have to because it would be the first NCAA Division I tournament berth for either the men's or the women's team. And if they both made it, it'd be both. They have to promote the heck out of it. They have to blow up awareness, let everybody know. Because
a big old
people,
parade or something, you know.
Yeah, just... and you guys know, you know, coming from Cambria and Cayucas, that there's edges of the county that don't even know that Cal Poly plays Division I basketball. They think,
absolutely,
oh, they're Division II, no, or absolutely, they're, you know, 1AA basketball. Like,
busy,
they don't even know
or
what
busy
they
painting, you know, or
yeah,
whatever.
Well, people have no. There's people in the county. This, I don't think Cal Poly necessarily is aware of this, because, you know, when you're immersed in that every day, we're playing to play in the tournament, you don't realize that there's people in the county who are your prospective fans who don't even know that you can compete with UCLA, USC,
absolutely,
and Florida for the national championship, to, you know, March Madness. There's too many people that I've come across that don't even know that Cal Poly is Division I. So when I say you got to promote the heck out of it, they can use an NCAA tournament berth as a tool to say, look, we're at the same level as the other guys. You know, I mean, year in, year out, we can't necessarily compete at that top level with the Pac-10, Pac-12 teams, but we're on that level, and then it creates more awareness, more people want to come to the games, and you know,
it just keeps on growing from
there. Yeah, it keeps growing from there.
And that's
they
how
finally
every program
get a new gym
has been built in the long run, you know?
You look at a team like, you know, even, I mean, best case scenario, like Gonzaga, or something that builds themselves up, or even St. Mary's. You know, a lot of those teams that they're playing.
Like St. Mary's sounds about right.
Those high mid majors that have built themselves up around.
Should we hit high school sports real quick before we get out of here?
Do you have any high school questions?
I have
for JD?
Another last question for JD.
This is like the fourth.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I know JD. You said that you came here, you know, in 2006, but. One trend that I've noticed growing up here is that Cal Poly seems to lose out on some of these upper talents, I think, locally. Some of these kids like Derek Jasper of Paso Robles. There also was Mecklen Davis, who was a really good basketball player from Atascadero High, who went to Cuesta, ended up transferring to Montana. You know, just some of these kids that, you know, Tyron Armstrong, who also was on that team with Derek Jasper, who really, I think, could really enhance not only the team itself, but as you say, kind of promote that awareness of Cal Poly sports, have that excitement locally here, that, you know, hey, I can play for my local team and make something happen here and maybe, you know, be a star even on that team. You know, what is your take as far as, you know, Cal Poly's relevance to some of these kids that are coming out of Paso or Morro Bay or, you know, any of the schools here, you know, some of these, you know, these really good players like that?
Well, I think you look at their recruiting class this year, like I said, Zach Allman from Mission, there's a guy right there, a local guy that they're taking on. Before they had signed him, I thought, you know, I knew of him and I'd seen him play, but I didn't know he was on their radar, and they got him. I know that there's Atascadero is a sophomore, Robbie Berwick, who is a football/basketball player. He's probably on their radar too, Cal Poly's radar for basketball, maybe even for football, who knows. But I can see them targeting those guys. Dylan Royer was a walk-on under Kevin Bromley. He's playing like a scholarship player now. I think that Calero, let me go back to Jasper for a sec. Just to address Mecklen Davis too. He was a 6'3" power forward at Atascadero. You know, mm-hmm. I don't think Cal Poly at that time was probably looking for a 6'3" power forward, but he went to Cuesta mm-hmm. under Rusty Blair, really transformed his game, turned into a guard, and became a marketable commodity. Went to Montana State and moved on. So maybe coming out of high school, he wasn't necessarily ready. Derek Jasper was definitely ready. He was an AAU superstar. He was on everybody's top, you know, point guard across the nation lists. He went to Kentucky. But I think Cal Poly maybe might have done – I mean, everyone knew he's going to Kentucky or UConn or something like that. But maybe if you're Cal Poly, you do a little bit more to offer that guy or just to let him know that you're interested. Because when he did transfer from Kentucky, I interviewed him for a story, asking him, where are you going to go? Long Beach State was someplace he brought up. UNLV was another one. I think there was another one in state, too. He was basically riding the wave that he was homesick. And I asked him about Cal. What about Cal Poly? They're in the Big West. He mentioned Long Beach State, and he just kind of smirked and laughed and was like, "Ah, yeah," and like trailed off. And it was like he wasn't even taking it seriously.
Yeah.
But if you're Cal Poly, maybe when he's in high school, yeah, you know he's going to go to Kentucky. But maybe you still wine and dine him. Maybe you say, "Hey, you know,
you never know, right?
We want you. We like you." Because you never know. Yeah, he might bust his knee, need microfracture surgery, and then be looking to bounce back, you know, to Cal Poly. And I think Calero is aware of that kind of stuff because they've been offering some kids that you wouldn't think.
That's good because, you know, because, I mean, I had the interview, you know, I had the opportunity to talk to Jasper after a game when I was coaching at Coast Union. They blew us out by like 60. You know, Jasper was dunking from like the free throw line. But anyways, you know, I wanted to talk to this kid after the game, and I got to sit down with him for about 10 minutes. And my impression of Jasper was, you know, he's a real nice kid. He was, in my opinion, he was humble. He seemed down to earth. When you're competing with Kentucky, UConn, you know, Coach Calhoun, so on and so forth, it's tough to obviously, you know, outmatch those guys. But sure, I mean, it would have been nice to feel like Cal Poly believed in themselves enough to at least wind and down him a little bit, because he seemed like the kind of kid that, you know, I'm not saying
he would have, impressionable, maybe,
but maybe would have even given it a thought. You know, stay home, be the star,
and
you know.
Well, and maybe he wouldn't have laughed when I asked him about Cal Poly.
And you see guys like, who on the team now is a transfer? Furman, Taylor, Eversley,
Donahue.
Furman, Taylor, and Donahue are all JUCO transfers. O'Brien transferred from University of San Francisco, and Eversley transferred from Rice. So obviously, Calero is a lot more open to stuff like that too. And last but not least, what kind of impact do you think Royer's had as far as that goes? Everybody wants to bring up that he's from Los Osos. If you watch that KSBY broadcast of the and by the way, Bill Halter does a really good job.
How did that go? Yeah, yeah. How did that go? I watched.
There were some technical difficulties, as you would, you know, expect when you only do one or two games a season. But Halter's,
did they get their levels right? I remember during the football game, they were like screaming into the microphone.
Yeah, Halter's a really good play-by-play guy, and for basketball, and I think he played college basketball. Yeah. When you look at the game, though, they were talking a lot about how Royer's from Los Osos, kind of trying to bring in a lot of local interest. You talk about capitalizing. Has Cal Poly capitalized on the fact enough, or do they do enough to promote the fact that, hey, we got some local kids coming here?
Is it Los Osos or Los Osos?
Los.
Either
people say Los
Osos,
but it's like one of those things like Los Gatos.
Yeah, Los Gatos. Yeah. Los Angeles.
Yeah. But is it Los or Los? I'm asking you because you're natives. I'm from out.
We just call it Los Osos.
It's just kind of interchangeable.
It sounds like Osos.
If I'm in the middle of a sentence, maybe I might say Los Osos.
I just say Osos.
It's more of a schwa. It's more of a schwa.
Yeah. I don't even say the Los, really. I just say Osos.
Some kids say L-O.
L-O.
I'm from L-O town.
L-O.
That's a little past our time.
That's a little ghetto right there, yeah.
Three stacks and a rock.
Yeah.
Royer, I want to say my first impression of Royer, I covered him in high school. He was our county, Slow County Tribune Player of the Year. So I got to watch him for a few years and got to know him a little bit better because he actually job shadowed me for his senior project at Morro Bay High. It's kind of fun. And I got to know him a little bit more than the usual athlete because of that. And people would always ask me, you know, we broke the news when he got the verbal, recruited walk onto Cal Poly. And people always ask me, well, what do you think? What's he going to do? What, you know, how's he going to pan out? They're not giving him a scholarship. Is he good enough? What's going to happen? And back then I said, by the time he's a senior, he'll be a capable off the bench player who can knock down some situational three pointers and you'll be glad that he's there. And he's totally exceeded that. Yeah. He's starting now, some games. He was 3 for 3 on three pointers the other night.
He's a Cal Poly's Tim Legler.
Yeah. At one point he was leading the nation in 3-point percentage.
Right.
As far as has Cal Poly capitalized on that enough, it's hard to say because I'm so close to the situation that I am well aware of what he's doing and where he's from. And I've tried to, I'm on baby leave right now, so I'm not like on active duty at the Tribune, but I've tried to get people at the Tribune like, hey, you know, be aware of this and put it up there because people would like to know. And I think that that is a point of pride for people around the county to
definitely
say, look at Royer. He's from Morro Bay High and he's doing well.
Awesome. Well, JD, you know, thanks a lot.
Much appreciated
for joining us.
Pleasure.
And we're going to get JD back on.
We will, for sure.
Hopefully soon, maybe before the Big West tournament. coming up here in March down in Anaheim.
Absolutely.
JD, thanks again.
Thank you, man. Appreciate
it. And we'll catch you soon. You're listening to the fansmanship.com podcast, and we'll be right back.
Yeah. Are you guys going to the Big West?
What's up, guys? Hey, welcome back to the fansmanship.com podcast with Andy Stevens and Owen Main. And formerly, we did have J.D. Scroggins.
Thanks again to J.D.
Thanks again, J.D.
Yeah, and Luke, is that you on the flute right there?
That was me on the flute, yeah. Wearing my little leprechaun shoes, dancing in the...
Real Jethro Tull out there?
In the Irish shrubbery.
With an orange beard and an orange wig.
And chest hair.
You got it, yeah.
Yeah. Luke, I didn't bring this up when JD was here. You said something last night about chest hair on your Twitter feed.
It is.
What did you say?
Well, you know, I like I said earlier, I love what Calero's doing, but I'm not going to lay off. I mean, I'm going to be real about this team like I'd be real about any other team. So I did sort of tell JD by Twitter, because he kind of was on Owen's side of things a little bit, like, well, you know, they're kind of where they were at, you know, that kind of PC answer. And I was just being hard, you know. I was like, hey, no, this team loses to everyone who's quality on their resume. And so I said, look, if they get to the March tournament, I will shave Scroggins into my chest hair.
Word Scroggins? Or
his last name.
Is that what you said? I thought you said you'd shave Cal Poly.
His likeness?
No, I said his last name. I will shave his last name into my chest hair.
Dude.
So then he
I don't know if he'd like that or not.
No, he was really intrigued. He asked me if I was intrigued too
for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah, Owen, you were?
I asked you that, I think.
If I have enough chest hair?
Uh-huh.
It was you?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I said, no, I don't. But still, it's a fun thing to say because I just, you know, that's how impossible, you know, it is.
And the next tweet was, now you have me talking about your chest hair. Well played, sir.
There you go.
So speaking about Cal Poly, and hopefully nobody has to see, you know, anybody's name and anybody's chest hair anytime soon. But speaking of Cal Poly,
you're not going to have to because they're okay.
That's just like, you know, your opinion, man. So speaking of Cal Poly, I thought it was interesting because you've asked me this question before, Luke, about Cristina Santiago and whether or not she's, you know, WNBA material. And I kind of poo-pooed it. And I think part of it was her injury that JD talked about. But it sounds like, you know, that's not something that hasn't been – or that is something that's been bandied about as far as her either playing in Europe or somewhere in the WNBA.
Yeah, I mean, if you watch the WNBA, which – us three around this table, I don't know how many combined games we've watched.
Not a lot.
But I've watched some. I mean, I've been intrigued.
I've never watched one all the way through. I can honestly
But you've watched it. Some, though. You've watched a quarter or whatever, you know. I mean, I've seen – or a few minutes.
You want to admit to it.
I honestly haven't. I don't.
Yeah, no, me either. But, I mean, I've watched it on occasion to where I've seen how these girls can play. They're tremendous athletes. But, yeah, I mean, Cristina Santiago, you watch her play. It's not because I'm just some strung-out guy who's all excited because some – great athlete plays on the Cal Poly team. No, the girl's got a great face-up game, like I said. She's stepping out. She's hitting the three now. She's agile. Yes, you can tell she's had a couple of knee injuries.
But she's still athletic.
And she's really athletic. She can rebound. She's aggressive. She's a leader. She shoots at 57% from the floor, 24, 10.5. Why not make her like a late-round pick?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean,
yeah.
You know,
or even if she isn't drafted, I mean, they have people that...
I wonder what the competition's like out there. Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know?
Undrafted free agents.
But I was going to say, one thing I've noticed about the WNBA is they have sort of like this hierarchy where there's this, you know, I don't know, maybe 25, 30 really good players. And then after that, it's a wash kind of. Like
It's a lot like college basketball women's teams.
Yeah.
So there's like 25 or 30 awesome women's college basketball teams, and then there's like everybody else too. It's a similar thing, yeah.
Yeah, you know, there's like Sue Bird and then a few of the other ones that are really good. And then you notice...
Rebecca Lobo.
She was kind of a bust.
Are all their girls named after animals? And they've got the bird, the Lobo. What else?
I don't know. But yeah, you know, and then you'll notice like the 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, you know, lady who comes off the bench. It's kind of a wash. It's like they're in there just passing the ball to Lobo or Bird.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, and you know. And who's saying that couldn't be Santiago?
Exactly.
So speaking of the NBA,
ball.
Yeah, round ball and
WNBA.
The NBA owns the WNBA, so we can use that as the connection here. So like, let's talk about the NBA season here, Andy, Luke.
impressions thus far.
We've gone through, what, like 2 or 3 weeks now of the season, and we see what happens. One thing that I notice as a fan is that
see
really...
See what happens, Larry?
When you find a stranger in the Alps. Yeah. So we've seen teams play 4 or 5 games a night for a couple weeks now. And for me as a fan, I enjoy it because there's a Laker game on most nights. Kind of like the Dodgers when baseball season's
happening.
That's
the one positive.
It's a positive thing that there's a game going on. And if there's not a Laker game, I guess there's a game going on most nights on NBA TV. It's not just like a weekly game of the week thing. Uh-huh. It's actual like...
See, they take all
ESPN,
the other nights.
There's a legitimate...
ESPN, I think, has...
Almost every night.
Wednesday and Friday, and then TNT has Tuesday and Thursday, and then I think NBA TV tries to have a legit game on the weekends and on Monday nights.
And on Monday night, yeah. And so there's always NBA going on.
You don't need the league pass to get the best games.
Hey, guys, so that was a little bit of a technical malfunction. Apologize for that. We're
league
back.
League pass to get the best game. Oh, wait, I just tried to splice it back.
Yeah. So you're right, Andy. We don't need the league pass to get the best games or to get any games. I mean, we have a lot of great games from around the league. Your early impressions, Andy, about the NBA season thus far?
Well, you know, like we were talking about, it's great that there's a game on almost every night, but we'll see. I mean, you can't really tell yet because, you know, we'll see in a – I'd say probably in about 2 to 3 weeks whether or not these back-to-back situations, usually twice a week, every team has had, I think, a back-to-back-to-back situation in the first like
early
2 to 3 weeks. Yeah. And then they're going to have one more, I think, later on in the season. So we'll see as that catches up. As of right now, everyone's kind of in the pack. As you look at the standings here, the Clippers are at 4-2, Lakers are at 5-4. Oklahoma City's off to the best start in the West, so they're at 8-2. They're a game and a half up on Portland. San Antonio's at 6-3. Miami's at 8-1 in the East. They look really good. Chicago 7-2. So, you know, some of the same teams are still there. But how about the injuries that have taken place? That's pretty much the biggest story so far, I think.
Absolutely. We talk about Zach Randolph, I think, is out for 6 weeks. And missing 6 weeks this year is a lot different than missing 6 weeks a year ago.
Because it's like missing 8 weeks.
It's that many games compacted. And so it's that much more important that you stay healthy throughout. We see Kobe's injuries to his hand. He doesn't have any time to heal his hand or his wrist. Yeah. And so
Kobe's
that's going to be an ongoing
story. And
he's
still shooting. It's like, come on, man. We got an advantage with Bynum.
Luke, tell me about Kobe's shooting. How much he's shooting. Have you been paying much attention to it?
Oh, God.
Have you?
It's been outrageous.
Like 25, 30 a game?
Yeah, close to 30, I think.
But it's not the volume of the shots. It's how bad the shots are. It's like he's making
this
it
is,
his, like,
he used to be able to get himself better shots.
To like, just try and make it the most difficult shot possible. Yeah. It's like he wants two to three guys to come to him just
well,
so
you
he
know
can
what
take
it is,
some
Andy?
Fadeaway
I mean,
jumper.
You know what it is? And I think that we've talked about this before on a couple other podcasts. Kobe just really looks old. I mean, I don't know if it's necessarily him just like wanting to be impressive with some acrobatic shot. I think it's literally because Kobe can't get open like he used to.
Yep. And he's
and he doesn't know any better.
Yeah.
Look, he's fought this aging thing for the last 2 or 3 years, and it's a testament to his will that he's been able to use his will to fight it. But his body is getting so worn down now that it's not just the aging that's making it.
And I think, you know, and not, I mean, this is, trust me, I'm not going here. It's not a comparison thing, but I think it's actually a compliment to Kobe with what I'm going to say, but I think, you know, when MJ got old, he started that kind of fadeaway thing. Remember, he would hit that fadeaway. He had like that 15-foot fadeaway, and then occasionally he would explode. But he got really good at that fadeaway jumper. And before that, he wasn't really a great jump shooter. Now Kobe already is a really good jump shooter, so I think Kobe is going to have to sort of learn, if he's going to stick around for a few more years or a couple more years even. Hey, as long as Bynum is healthy, give Bynum the ball. Give Powell the ball, you know, at that 10-foot range, and just sort of sit out there at that 15-foot range and hit those jumpers.
Well,
those
he needs to take
needed.
The shot when he has it. See, I think Kobe's thing is he always tries to put you in the popcorn machine, and then at the
as opposed to just taking
at
an easy
the very
one.
End, he'll take a little, you know, five where he has to do a little 5-20 turnaround jumper and make it as difficult.
Is
as
he
possible.
Tony Hawk?
Just a 10. What is it? 1080? No,
3160. Something, you know.
Any multiple of 90. but You know, why not just take the shot when he has it? I mean, because that's what Jordan would do. When he would, when he had the shot, he would take it. He was confident in taking 20-foot jump shots because he knew he could make a high volume of them.
The open shot.
Instead of trying to, you know, get closer and take a 15-foot fadeaway after a series of dribbles and, you know, 180s, 360s. I don't want to get into it again. But, getting onto something else, how about the Heat? What do you think about the early season power that they have shown and how well they played? They went to Atlanta and beat the Hawks with just Chris Bosh, no LeBron James, no Dwayne Wade.
I think this season makes you hate the Heat more because LeBron James and Dwayne Wade have both been out or been struggling with some kind of injury. All of a sudden, their third wheel, Chris Bosh, who we've all sort of bagged on at one point or another as the soft power forward, comes into Atlanta two nights ago without LeBron or Dwayne Wade and drops 35-14 in a W. I mean, Atlanta's 6-3. That's an incredibly talented team. And more technical difficulties over here.
No, we're fine.
No, we're good. We're good. I was just looking at the Heat roster, and I was trying to think of the big changes they had this year. You know,
but Battier hasn't really played, has he?
Well, but here's the thing about having Battier on your team. It's a guy who's so good in the locker room, and for that team, having a guy in the locker room and having a guy that is way better than his numbers indicate.
He's way better.
He's the Scott Hatterberg to the Houston Rockets. Let me put it this way. So
that was a weird comparison.
Yeah, so Houston Rockets are kind of like the A's. That. They're kind of like
he's
the A's.
He's also in a hit movie starring George Clooney.
Brad Pitt. Okay, so Scott Hatterberg.
Oh, man.
I reference, of course, Moneyball, the A's. The Rockets are kind of like the A's of the NBA. They look at Moneyball-like statistics more than any other team. And believe me, all the teams do it. But there are certain numbers that teams like the Rockets look at and utilize a lot.
So what are they looking at?
They're looking at what happens.
As far as Battier.
As far as Battier, yeah. What happens when you're on the floor, plus minus? Okay. Do you actually affect a guy like Kobe and his jumper? And are you efficient on offense on top of that? So guys like Battier, according to the Rockets, at least in years past, has been really undervalued. And so they had him on their team, and they actually paid him a little bit of money.
Bit, actually.
Yeah, he got a good
7 or 8 million a year.
Yeah,
so
and
Battier
so,
could be a difference. Well, what
no,
about
no, no, so Battier is a difference maker because he'll play a role and he'll do it really well.
What about
on a team like the Heat, and he's dependable.
How about having Haslam back early in the season?
But I think we're missing a huge point. You know, a lot of reports have come out that you know LeBron James has been in an entirely different mood this year. I mean, they said
a
last
better
year,
mood or a worse
a
mood?
A much better mood.
Yeah.
I mean, he's. I mean, before he came
he's
in last year,
he's adjusted to living away from home for the first time in his life.
Well, no, I mean, before he
doesn't want to be the villain anymore. He decided that he's not the
villain. It takes a while, guys.
Well,
I've moved to different places.
Before,
it takes a year or two to get used to a new place.
I mean, come on. That move wasn't like you or I moving. That was like the people hated you
and
for
the rest
moving.
Of the country hating you for it. Yeah.
Okay, so you know. According to reports, LeBron was incredibly uptight all last year. He was not a happy person in the locker room, so on and so forth, whatever. We can all argue as to why. But this year, he's sort of back to the old sort of smiling LeBron James, just kind of the guy with the beard, the jolly kind of superstar.
He even came out and said that, you know, I don't have to be the villain anymore. I can just be a nice – because he kind of embraced that role, it seemed, last year. And it didn't work out.
And
well.
He's actually
not good at being the villain.
No.
Because he's not a stone cold killer.
No.
He's kind of the happy-go-lucky.
And if you've noticed, early in the season, minus the couple games he's missed with injury, he's looked really good. I think you're right. I think Dwayne Wade's that stone killer on that team. LeBron
Definitely.
James is the superstar who's going to put up 28-8-8. You know, I mean,
real quick, I have a story that I read, and it was shared by somebody in the
– Do tell.
Yeah, do tell. Walter and is it Eos Jr., the photographer? Junior.
His dad was like a legend.
Right, absolutely. He's like one of the best sports photographers in the country. Goes to shoot a commercial or goes to shoot LeBron James last year. And he's in L.A.
Yeah, I heard the story.
And Bron rolls with a posse like 15 deep, like bigger than Bryce Schubert posse. Roll 9 deep.
I think Kobe rolled that one.
At the Motel 8. And so Bron gets there, and there's a guy on Bron's posse whose job it is.
Stop calling him Bron, first of all. Okay.
There's a guy on LeBron's posse.
Continue.
El Brondo.
There's a guy on his posse whose job it is
La Branda?
To talk to this photographer. In other words, the photographer cannot talk to LeBron directly. And he's taking pictures of LeBron.
There's an intermediary.
So the photographer is taking pictures of LeBron and saying, okay, LeBron, now look this way and smile. And the guy's like, okay, LeBron, look this way and smile. Like, you gotta talk to me first, then I'll tell LeBron. That's my job. And LeBron wouldn't talk to the guy.
That's fantastic. I love that.
How
classically NBA Brad is that?
And he's the face of the NBA, man. He's
you
it.
Guys, did you ever read Phil's book?
Wait, I've read
Kobe. Kobe would roll that posse too back then. It's just part of that. It's just a snobbery thing.
Not like that.
Photography intermediary.
You're right. So, Kobe was much better. He rolled 10 deep and Bron rolled 12 deep.
Speaking of Kobe and the Lakers, real quick, they are kind of who I thought they were. They're They're like 5-4. They're
kind of.
How about that point that I made last podcast we had? I said, I wish when Bynum comes back from this injury and a suspension, that he comes out and just kind of takes it by storm and goes. I mean, he had his first 20-20 game. He's averaging about 18 and 12 so far.
He's pulling down some boards.
I want him to come out and put some numbers up so they can go ahead and trade him for Dwight Howard in that trade exception.
Okay, so you're seeing it that way. Okay, because I was going to ask you. I don't think Kobe Bryant's going to allow that guy to sort of take over the helm.
I want him to.
I would love for him to take over
trade
the helm.
Value.
So you're seeing it as just a trade value,
exactly. Yeah. So you can trade him for Howard and take on like contract with that trade.
Is it just me? But Howard's happy in Orlando now.
Yeah,
again.
And if Bynum's going to be that good, Andy, and if he's going to be healthy, I'll take Bynum.
Regardless of how happy Howard is in Orlando, the bottom line is
about happy.
The general manager is the one who signs the contract, and he knows that Howard, there's not a good chance that he's going to re-sign with him next year, so he needs to either try to somehow re-sign him now or get what he can for him, or, you know, otherwise he's going to get nothing.
Andy, I'm saying from a Lakers fan perspective, if Bynum can actually stay healthy and if he's doing what he's doing now, I'm fine with just keeping him.
Which is what?
Which is 20-12.
Yeah, right.
No.
I'm fine with keeping him.
You're fine with 18 and 12 when Dwight Howard makes 25-15 just a night.
Howard doesn't make 25-15.
Sure he does. You seen the other night? He had like what? He had like 30. Okay.
What's Howard averaging, Luke?
Okay, I'll clear it up. He's 22-14.
Is he really?
He's 22-14-3.
And 3? Okay. Okay, and what's Bynum so far?
I think he's 20-12-2 or something.
Okay. But I think Andy's not speaking about just this year.
But
he's speaking like as a
long term and throughout the whole season. Can Bynum keep this up?
That's my question. If he does all year, I'm good with it.
He's not going
to. What has history told us?
You guys have been saying this for like 4 years.
I'm knocking on wood hard.
Laker fans have been saying this for 4 years.
Because he's not
going to
stay healthy, probably.
Can I just – I want to say something. I want to be honest for a second. Laker fans have been saying this for 4 years.
How many?
If Bynum can just do this, if Bynum can just do that.
Night in, night out.
And
like,
I'm
speaking,
and I'm speaking with it with this accent because most Laker fans are SoCal, you know, and they're like, if Bynum can
Matt
just.
Matt Jones style.
Yeah, if Bynum can just, you know, like.
Bynum's got to do this. Just do that.
Yeah, and they all have like those like, they all have those Lenny Bresnan bangs, you know.
Or they have the flat bill going.
And he's flattening his bill.
No. I mean,
dude, after I got back from HP, it was like a gnarly. I have to beat that out. Got a little too into character there. All right. I'm sorry.
Oh, man.
I want to beat that out. And I get
in trouble for my LeBron and Kobe joke. How about going back door?
That's my first slip of any podcast. That's the first time I've actually
I get in trouble for my back door joke, and this guy's dropping F-bombs here on Fansmanship Podcast.
Sorry, I just got into character a little too much.
Hey, on that note, I think it's about time to take a break.
All right. Let's hit the NFL next.
Let's take a break, take a break.
That's what the dump button's for.
Let's take a break. Let's chill out a little bit.
Hey, guys, let's go ahead and just come back next time, okay? You know, just go ahead.
On the Fansmanship Podcast.
All right.
Bro.
Welcome back to Fansmanship.com podcast. Final segment here on Fansmanship.com with Andy Stevens and Luke Johnson. I'm Owen Main. Want to thank again Slow Tribune's J.D. Scroggin.
And we need a blog there, his website.
There.
Blogging with Scroggin. Just Google Blogging, B-L-O-G-G-I-N with, of course, and it's Scroggin. His name is spelled S-C-R-O-G-G-I-N.
And you can follow him on Twitter at SLO College Beat. So search for him, find him. He's always got intelligent takes, especially on Cal Poly and on local college athletics. Gentlemen, big NFL weekend. It was wild card weekend for a lot of people. A lot like the first round of the NCAA tournament. It's a fun weekend of games and the slate of what's going on. Talk to me a little bit about your impressions of the weekend's games.
Tim Tebow.
That's gotta
Did I hear something?
Right.
Who was that? Did one of you guys say anything?
That's the lead, without a doubt.
That's the story, right?
That is the story. Although, you know, he allowed Roethlisberger to come, or not he, but their defense allowed Roethlisberger to come back at the end.
Which is an interesting point that you just made, Andy, because I was talking to Owen today before the podcast about Tim Tebow and a few others. And as always, Tebow, you know, throws the winning pass to a receiver for a touchdown. And the first response is breakdown defensively, which I'm not denying. And incredible.
That wasn't my response, though, but that was the first response from the gentleman we were
watching
the game.
He did catch
it at
50.
You know, it was an incredible play by the receiver.
They said 50 on the radio.
So after three poor weeks, Tebow pulls it out, or whoever pulls it out. It's Owen's argument's been it's the defense that pulls it out. Other people argue it's been something else.
My argument is the defense
that
sets the stage for him to be successful. So just like earlier when JD was talking about how Coach Claro has a lot of precise attention to detail, and that gives his team a chance every time to do what they do. The defense for the Broncos is very solid, and it gives Tebow a chance to do it.
Sure.
Because he's not playing from behind.
It's solid, but
the Broncos aren't playing from behind. They're not winning a game that they're losing, you know, 17-0. They're not winning a game that they're down 21-7.
Sure.
It's not happening.
I can agree with that.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
But anyways, they did win today.
Well,
they won today,
20-23. They did beat the Steelers, you know, and you can just go on and on, and people will list all the pundits tomorrow, of course, will list all the different reasons why the Steelers weren't the quote-unquote Steelers, the real Steelers. You have Roethlisberger who, you know, it looked like his leg was about to fall off there for a while.
He
did have his receivers.
The Knicks center.
Ewing?
Willis Reed.
Oh, Willis Reed, yeah.
Out of the tunnel.
He did have all his receivers, although they did not have Mendenhall, who is kind of a big deal for them. But Roethlisberger, he thrives on being able to create that extra few seconds in the pocket or just kind of getting out of the pocket. And with the leg the way that it was, he wasn't able to do that. Now, you know, Pittsburgh was at kind of a disadvantage, you can say, but they're still the Pittsburgh Steelers. They still play a really good defense. Ryan Clark wasn't able to play because of a sickle cell condition that he has that they said that he would actually die if he were to play.
Whoa,
At Mile High, yeah, they're starting free safety.
Oh, because it's such high altitude?
Right.
Wow.
So he wasn't able to play. He didn't
probably not worth it.
No.
Yeah, right. But the funny thing is he wanted to play. You know, it's like, but you'll die if you play. No, man, I got
to
get out there.
Taking the Ronnie Lott mentality to another level.
So yeah. Tebow's moving on, and they were the lowest seed to move on, so they will be going to top seed New England next week. Tebow versus Brady. What do we think about that?
Yeah, I think if Tebow loses to Belichick, the whole Tebow thing just amuses me because people are so far one way or the other. You know, again, he kind of is who we
polarizing,
think he is.
That's the word.
He's polarizing. Yeah. Go back to Dennis Green. You know, they are who we thought they were. Mm-hmm. He is who we thought he was. He's a winner. He can run the ball a little bit.
Just
he does
there.
Some
it's
different
not great.
Things.
He's a winner.
He's a winner. I think that you look at a tactician like Belichick. I'm really interested to see what the Patriots are going to do against them.
Because their defense isn't
that good. They've played them already this year, right?
Their defense is horrible.
Yeah. They beat the Broncos once already this year, did they not?
Their defense is bad.
In Denver,
they beat them.
And they
had to
come back on them, I think. The
Patriots came back on them and beat them.
Oh, you're right, and then blew them out at the end.
10 points or something.
Yeah, so I'm interested to see what kinds of adjustments Belichick makes and also what kind of adjustments John Fox and the Broncos make because Tebow is a little bit better than he was before. He's still below average. He is who he is.
Yeah.
But he has made a couple good throws there at the end.
He was throwing the ball a lot today. Yeah, he threw the ball very well today.
He was 10 for 21 with 200 plus. I mean, so, you know, for Tebow, that's...
He throws the long ball.
That's like B plus, A minus.
You know, the 10-yard out is not going to help Tebow and his team. What's going to help him and his team is the long ball and him running.
I want to talk a little bit about the surprising Giants-Falcons game.
Was that surprising for you?
Well, I'm not saying the Falcons' loss was surprising. I'm saying the 24-2 rout was surprising.
Correct. Yeah, I would agree.
Can we, like, hang up this Matt Ryan?
Yeah, Matty Ice.
Just sort of.
What do you mean ice? What do you mean, ice in your – you're 0-3 in the playoffs.
Can we just hang
can
it up?
Can we stop anointing people yeah. with nicknames before they've done anything?
Can we get over how about can we that? Get over Ryan? I mean, Matt Ryan, let's just get over the guy.
The red – what's Andy Dalton?
The Red Rifle?
The Red Rifle.
But that has nothing to do with, like, being calm under pressure. Like, oh, Matty Ice. Like, he's, you know, he's like a snake, you know.
Can we get over it?
Winner. It's like, come on,
yeah, sure.
Man.
I'm over it.
Enough.
No, I mean, Ice. I know all three of us here. I'm throwing this out to the tweet to the
it's rhetorical.
12 to 15 people who listen to us. It's, can we get over Matty, the whole Matty Ice
yes.
thing?
Yes, the editorial. The Royal Week.
The Royal Week.
We're over Matty Ice.
What about Michael Turner? I didn't see his final numbers. Was he just absolutely stymied or what?
You know, I think Mike Smith's got to be on the hot seat. Listen,
sure.
the guy turned the now franchise, he does, yeah. helped turn the franchise around. He was a relative unknown from a, you know, casual fan's perspective.
But now they have the talent to do it and they're not quite.
Right. He got Matt Ryan and he got a bunch of guys who had been underperforming where they needed to be. Now he's got talented guys and now they are underperforming again. So the question is it time for a coaching change in Atlanta? It's a really attractive place, I think. You know, there's relatively low pressure.
Roddy White, Julio Jones. I mean, look at all the weapons that Matt Ryan has. Roddy White, Julio Jones, Tony Gonzalez.
So is it a Matt Ryan issue? Is it a Mike Smith issue? Is it both of them?
It's a Matt
Ryan. Is it neither?
It's a Ryan issue.
You think it is? You don't think it's a play calling issue? You think it's a Ryan issue?
I've just seen enough of Ryan. I've watched a lot of Ryan, you know, over the last few years. I'm just not impressed. I watched the guy play. To me, he has an average arm, and he's not the most athletic guy, and
he doesn't do anything.
He's got tons,
well,
and like you said, he's got tons of
Michael
people
Turner
to throw the ball to. He's got Turner
to.
Who's handing the ball to. So guys are going to technically,
weapons,
yeah.
Weapons.
You know what's funny, guys? What is Matt Ryan not specifically? He's got an okay arm. He's a decent game manager. What he's not is what the future of the quarterbacking position is. He's not mobile. You look at guys.
He's not exceptionally mobile.
Listen, he's not exceptionally mobile. You look at Flacco, Roethlisberger. Roethlisberger loses his mobility, and what happens? His
look at Brady. Look at Brady Breeze and Peyton Manning.
But Brady
and
Breeze,
I'm saying where it's
kind of in the pocket. They know how to feel the pocket.
So you're saying guys like Brady Breeze and Rodgers know how to move in the pocket.
Rodgers is mobile. Rodgers is very athletic.
But what made Brady when he won those Super Bowls is he revolutionized kind of the way Joe Montana did. The ability to just move around and feel the pocket, and instead of guys having to scramble to get those extra 1, 2, 3 seconds, he was just able to kind of finagle those
kind of maneuverable.
And the one time he wasn't able to do it, his knee got jacked up. But the other thing I was going to say about Brady is that I'm not saying
that was low.
I'm not saying it was a low hit by the was it the Bengals or the Ravens?
No, that was a low blow.
I was going to say it doesn't mean you can't be successful being a guy like Brady. It means. What does that say about how great Brady actually is to have
sure.
still be the, as good as
you.
He is
yep.
and to still yep. see the field like he does? Same
I
with
agree
Peyton.
With you.
And
yeah.
so, you know, you talk about a guy like Matt Ryan who's clearly a notch below that, if not more notches than
about,
one.
About 10.
Yeah, about 9 in the eyeball. You talk about.
I take Flacco over him. In a
right, because Flacco's mobile too.
Yeah,
Flacco's a big
mobile
guy. Ryan's an average quarterback size, and he's not mobile, and that's where the quarterbacking position
is. I take Schaub over him.
Really?
Yeah, I take Schaub over him.
I think they're a wash. Yeah,
I take Schaub.
We'll
over him.
See. I
and
mean,
it's another reason, and it's another reason why Rivers is struggling this year as well. I think you know.
Okay,
it's,
here's kind
it's
of
the
a pocket
shift
guy.
Towards yeah. it's the shift towards a mobile quarterback.
So then you're
quarterback.
Saying that in your opinion, if you can be mobile, I mean, excuse me, immobile, but still be a great quarterback, you're really really great.
If you're mobile in the pocket,
so you're difference. Saying because like Matthew Stafford's not the most athletic guy.
Correct. Correct.
Puts up like 1,500 yards this year.
He has the best arm in the game right now.
Okay, yeah. So you're saying he has that exceptional pocket.
He's a number
ability.
One pick.
He throws
20
yard outs off his back foot.
Yeah, so he's got that exceptional yeah. pocket ability. You're saying okay,
mm-hmm. he's just
yeah. an exceptional arm. Yeah.
But I think Mike Smith should be on the hot seat at least coming into next year. And if they don't advance to at least the second round of the playoffs, they might want to try to get someone else in there.
Atlanta's got a good, notoriously good front office too, so they're right. gonna make good decisions.
Moving on to the other wild card game, we had Houston hosting Cincinnati. That game was close for a little while at the beginning. Houston pulled away at the end. It was a matchup of rookie quarterbacks. They made a big deal out of that. T.J. Yates from North Carolina, Andy Dalton from TCU, and they made a big deal about Dalton coming from the Houston area. I believe Katy High School,
Katy, Texas.
Yeah, he played Greg McElroy in the. I think it was the 4A championship game for Texas, and then they went into how McElroy made his comments about the New York Jets locker room and how you shouldn't air dirty laundry when you're a fourth string quarterback. But I'm getting way off topic here. So that means Houston is 3 seed, so they will move on and play Baltimore, which is the 2 seed. Does Houston have a chance in Baltimore beating a Ravens team who a lot of people have picked as the Super Bowl pick out of the AFC?
More of a chance than you guys say. And I say that
I never said
I say that because I think scores. I say that because I think that Baltimore has been way up or way down this year, and if you're in the playoffs and you have a way down game, you're done. And so I'm really interested to see how the kind of semi-aging Ravens defense does, and whether they actually do put pressure on Yates, or whether the Texans are going to be able to impose their will in terms of Arian Foster in
the
running game.
Maybe the X
factor. I mean, that's if they can get Foster going, what I think the Ravens are going to try to do is hit Foster hard and a lot early on, gang tackle him, make him feel it for the first two quarters.
Ravens have
and make the Texans try to throw the ball.
So my prediction is this. I think if you are, and I agree with you, Owen, I think the Texans have a shot. I think the Texans are going to lay off. They're going to lay off a little bit with Foster early because they know they're going to be trying to hit him hard, and they're going to go deep to Andre Johnson early. That's my pick.
Ooh.
They're going to go deep to Andre Johnson early to see if they can get a quick score, uh-huh. and that'll change things.
That sounds kind of like against the grain or something.
I'm just telling you. Uh-huh. I think they're going to go deep to Andre. If Andre can score,
Luke McJohnson, McLovin.
You know, because right,
so you think
they're
going to try to, you know, run Foster, and then, you know, where is it going to be play action, or are they going to set it up, or is it just
gonna
be right off
the
bat?
Play action?
Yeah, okay,
there you go. First series,
yeah,
okay,
and the final game. I'm sorry, go ahead.
The whole motivation is going to be to open up the game for Arian Foster.
The final game is the Niners, right?
It was the Lions losing to New Orleans. New Orleans again pulled away. In that game.
Meaning that New Orleans is going to go play the Niners, is what
I
was thinking.
And then
they're
going to end up playing the Niners. Not a lot of people picked. Not a lot of people picked the Lions. I mean, they, you know,
I did.
They had a chance to kind of hang with them, but
yeah.
I don't think you have to be a really experienced team if you're kind of that, you know, run and gun type of team that's just a big time offense. You kind of have to have the experience to be able to win playoff games. You can't just come in with just a high flying offense and no defense without any experience and expect to win.
Well, we know the NFL's a league of parity, right? And to go from where the Lions went, but to go from where the Lions were last year, the lowly Lions, they were, and for how many years they've been lowly, and or 2 years ago, excuse me, and then last year was
their
a little better.
The last playoff win was, I think, 92.
92. So we're going to be happy if we're the Lions, and we're taking a step forward here in getting to the playoffs. You know, this year, certainly, I think it was a little bit far-fetched to think that they were going to beat New Orleans and really make a big playoff run, being as young as they are with Stafford and Calvin Johnson and some of those guys. And I think they're just a few parts away, including maybe an additional running back and some more line help on both sides, and not having
a
crazy...
Hopefully they get Best back, that's not a career-ending deal with those.
The Kevin Smith story I really like this year. The running back who
he kind of made a comeback too.
He was on their team a couple years ago, and then he was out of football.
He's been solid too.
Central Florida, really.
He was good. He was good a few years ago.
Right. And he kind of hung in there, and I thought, you know, him getting back in and scoring, he scored some touchdowns and did some things for them. It was kind of a cool deal. And gosh, the Lions are a real feel good story in a town like Detroit.
Absolutely,
being able to rally around them.
So you have New Orleans going to San Francisco. Everyone wants to say San Francisco is the most quote unquote complete team in the playoffs. And all
I don't know.
You know, they have a great defense, but
what about
does that make up
is
for having
great?
Such? I mean, their offense is basically such to where they're going to just run the power. They're just going to try to run the ball down your throat with the same scheme over and over again. And you know, there's going to come a time when a team's going to stop them. I think if New Orleans gets a few turnovers and they can put up more than, I'm going to say, 25 points, that they'll win the game.
Oh, yeah. If they can score 25 points, they'll beat the Niners, I think.
Absolutely.
25-30, yeah.
They'll score 24.
But if the game starts as this kind of 9-6 battle, because that's the way I've seen San Francisco
9-6 at halftime.
Win games. You know?
This whole most complete team thing blows my mind. I've watched a lot of games, and I'm not impressed with the 49ers offense.
Yeah, you know what doesn't impress me,
where is that coming from?
I know there's statistics.
Niner fans?
Yeah, I know there's statistics out there that say that say like, oh, Alex Smith hasn't thrown, you know, an interception. They have so little turnovers. It's because they run the ball on
because
third and eight.
Like nine, right? Because he's like
it's because they run a draw every time on third and eight. And
yeah, because he's 9 for 14 with 98 yards and a touchdown.
So I'll make the Tebow argument here for Alex Smith too, because I think there's something to be said for the Niners. Their defense is good enough that they've been able to go 13-3 running that kind of crap offense where they're running a draw play up the middle to the fullback on third and eight and getting their 2 yards and punting. And their defense is good enough that when they get it back, they're closer than they were before.
Or they're in like jumbo personnel first and ten with like three tight ends and two backs and just running the power right down your throat. You know, it's amazing.
I'm going to tell you what. There's only so many times I think when this that type of football works. I mean, the 2000 Ravens is a perfect example. Besides that, think of every team that's won a Super Bowl. You got to be able to score.
Yep.
It's not going to work. The Saints are going to roll in that game. It's not going to work.
You think so? Even in San Francisco?
Yes.
You know,
it's not going to fly.
Yeah.
You can't shut down Breeze in that team.
Luke, I would say I would agree with you if it was in New Orleans. I think in this case, Candlestick's going to be windy. It's the wintertime. Candlestick's going to be windy, and that's going to favor the 49ers.
Do you feel that San Francisco's luck? Maybe
I think it's
going to
be a close game, but
Niners.
I think it's run out.
And now that they're really playing with the big boys on a big-time stage, that it's
– I think it's run out.
Well, I picked New Orleans regardless to play in the NFC Championship game against Green Bay, so I have New Orleans. We have New York going to Green Bay. Speaking of Green Bay, Green Bay gets back two of their big offensive linemen, Ryan Bulaga and Chad Clifton, who's the left tackle. They also get back Greg Jennings. New York is kind of that team that the Packers were last year, right? They had to win two in a row to get in the playoffs.
Yeah.
They're really hot right now.
Yeah.
Do they have a shot up in Green Bay? Green Bay went to New York this year and beat New York.
Here's why they have a shot.
Yeah. Pass rush?
Because
Victor Cruz, Mario Manningham, Hakeem Nicks are three big play guys.
Yep.
Who can hit you anytime. And I know the Packers are known for their high-powered offense. Well, the Packers don't have as good a running game as the Giants have, and the Giants also have their three big guys. And so the Giants certainly have it. I think they have a shot, especially since they've faced the Packers already, and especially since the Packers are coming off a week of starting their backup and then a bye week.
Uh-huh.
There's a real chance that they could get kind of shell-shocked early on, and then it's going to be a dogfight.
Yeah,
I think there's a chance of it. The other, I guess the flip side of that is that the Packers come out prepared for the Giants and just kick
and
their
the
butt.
The Giants are kind of a team sorry, Luke, I'll let you get your point here real quick. The Giants are kind of a team that can play in that bad weather. So they do have that. I mean, San Francisco and New Orleans isn't going to win in Green Bay, I don't think. So if Green Bay wins this game, they have a really good chance of going to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and I've absolutely never liked Eli Manning. I'll make that clear. But this year, the guy's been great in the fourth quarter. So you know that if they can keep it close, it's going to be a great battle between him and Aaron Rodgers. It's going to be interesting for me to see how the Giants' defense comes out to play in the first quarter. Those front four or five on their defensive line are dangerous when they seem to be engaged. So I just want to see if Austin
for the Giants.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they're healthy now, though, too.
I know.
And that's a big
I
want to
see how they come out. I mean, if they come out and they shut down Green Bay, you know, the almighty Green Bay, on the first couple, you know, plays for Green Bay, then I'll,
right.
know, maybe, you know. Hey.
Yeah.
Why not?
So do we want to make some picks for football? I guess we'll get into that this week, probably.
Yeah. Do you guys want to pick it real quick?
By the next turn. Yeah, we can go ahead and pick it real quick. I'm going to go ahead and go with Baltimore. I'm going to go with three or four favorites, actually. I'm going to go with Baltimore. I'm going to go with New England, both at home. I'm going to go with Green Bay at home. And I'm going to go with New Orleans on the road. And we'll worry about the rest later.
I'm going to go Houston over Baltimore in the upset. I'm going to go New England. And in the NFC, we'll go with the Giants and the 49ers.
Whoa.
He's just picking crazy just to do it. That's all.
The Giants and the 49ers.
We need some repercussions.
Yeah, because, we do, because Owen knows that we only
have
15 people who listen to this.
I don't have enough chest hair.
So there are
to shave anything into my chest hair.
Yeah, so he knows that
just
if he does
your back
make
hair. How about that?
Yeah. Put that away. I'm going to follow suit. I'm going to say Houston does beat Baltimore at home. I'm going to say the Patriots put Tebow in his place. I'm going to say the Saints, like I said, are going to, you know, cause the 49ers' luck to run out. And then I think it's going to be closer than we think between the Packers and the Giants. But I do think that Packer offense is too incredible.
they do pull that one out by a touchdown or 10. We'll see.
About 9. Right on, guys.
All right. Going to do one more little segment here, one more quick segment, or?
Yeah, we'll be back on fansmanship.com podcast.
It's like our DMX version. Come on.
Flesh of my flesh, blood of my blood.
I'm ashamed that I even know that. Hey, guys, welcome back. Thank you for sticking with us if you have. If you haven't, then it's just three guys talking to each other around a table and sounding crazy. But this is the exciting part of the podcast. We are going to this is our sort of random trivia section that we aren't always successful at completing, but tonight we're going to do it for you guys. I'm going to introduce a couple questions here. Owen or Andy have the ability to go ahead and jump in and just answer it.
We don't have buzzers. We don't have clickers.
No buzzers, no clickers. So
just say your name when you're ready to.
But there's no point scoring here. There's no point scoring. In fact, the point scoring goes towards the person who asked the question because the question's so random. So we go ahead and see how they score me tonight.
We'll go ahead and go with
What is the height differential between Shaquille O'Neal and his first wife?
1 foot.
Owen.
1 foot 11
inches. I
thought we
were supposed to call
her. 1 foot 11 inches.
No, it's 2 feet 3 inches.
It is 2 feet 2 inches.
Aye.
Yes. Shaquille O'Neal, 2 feet 2 inches. Go ahead and figure that one out. Which,
try to figure out how that works.
Which famous
26 inches total.
Which, whoa.
Easy.
Which famous which famous yodeler?
I'm out.
Next pass.
No, I have a shot at this. Just listen.
Which famous good-looking yodeler?
I have a shot at this, really?
You do. Which famous good-looking yodeler did Shaquille O'Neal get the opportunity to partake with?
Jewel.
Yes, yes, sir. Good boy. All right.
See.
Which of the current Big Three? Well, now Big Four minus one, I guess you can say, but I'll say Big Three. Forget Rondo. Which of the current Big Three in Boston, so the, you know, Garnett, Pierce, and Ray Allen, which of these three did not celebrate Christmas until their 18th birthday?
I have a guess for this.
Ray Allen, because his dad was, I don't know, overseas. And
I was going to say Garnett, because Garnett's great. Kind of, and because he, yeah, I'll say Garnett.
Who is Kevin Garnett? Because, yeah, he was raised Jehovah's Witness.
Oh, really?
Let's go.
Really, Kevin Garnett was Jehovah's Witness.
He was, yeah.
Really?
Yes, yes, he was. Yes.
That's wow. Wow.
That explains it.
Wow. In a 1995 Sports Illustrated article.
I just have a quick question. How does Kevin Garnett being raised Jehovah's Witness affect his choice of language on the court during the games?
Not very good.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of Garnett's language. Go ahead.
Okay.
Well, you said 18 years. You know, just because you're raised a certain way doesn't mean you're going to follow it.
Correct.
Sure.
Adult life, yeah.
Okay, in a 1995 article featuring Larry Johnson, it was confirmed that he has this many illegitimate children.
1995?
1995.
He could have some sense
eight.
Then.
Higher? Higher than eight?
I'm going to go.
Go ahead on.
I'm going to go six.
It was confirmed that he does have six, but there were two that are unconfirmed, so it could be
look
eight.
At that. No, that's strange right there. That just doesn't happen.
That's high five worthy.
Wow.
This 1980s, in that same vein, this 1980s Hall of Famer, best known for his on-court battles with Michael Jordan, kind of gives you a hint, was at one point, it was confirmed / unconfirmed that he had 20 illegitimate children.
Dominique Wilkins.
I was going to say that he might have that real.
Dominique Wilkins. It's actually, there's been reports that he had to play that long because he had 20 different women he was paying. Anyways, let's go ahead.
Dominique, you're hanging on a lot. Got to pay them bills, man.
That was the Clipper years, right? Those are the Clipper years?
The Clipper years, yes. Okay, let's go ahead and get to some more important things.
Nick for three, bingo!
This former big leaguer.
Bingo!
This former big leaguer was the longest to flirt with 400 since Ted Williams during the lockout shortened season of 1994.
Oh, I know this.
First, it was the longest to flirt with 400 like Ted Williams. Happened in the lockout short season of 94. Yeah, he basically was cut short from this pursuit.
I don't know, Andres Galarraga.
94.
That was a good choice, though.
Yeah. It's Larry Walker, I think.
It's not Larry Walker. Actually Tony Gwynn, who hit 394 through 120 games.
Wow. I should have said Gwynn. That was
Awesome. And we might actually get a chance to talk to Tony Gwynn this year.
Yeah.
They're coming to Bagot Stadium to play the Mustangs.
And the last question, I gave you the yodeler. I gave you all the exciting questions. I'm going to go ahead and...
How do you yodel? Like, what is the... Is there like...
I don't know. It's amazing.
Or you just start making noises and go...
You know what? It's a gift. I mean, people say that it just sort of just comes out. It's like...
It's just like good trivia questions, man. It's a gift that you have.
It's
inside of your soul.
Yeah.
Flatten that cap out. Yeah, man. It's like, you know.
There are currently 8 players on the all-time receptions list who have over 1,000 receptions. There are 2 who are currently active. Who are these 2 players?
As he pulls
over 1,000 receptions. I know one of them. He's a tight end. His name's Tony Gonzalez. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, that was easy.
Yeah.
But you might have a hard time with the next one.
Really?
Well,
1,000.
I don't have a hard time with it. He's a running back.
Donald Driver?
His name is LaDainian Tomlinson.
1,000 receptions? Yeah. No. Come on,
buddy. You tell me. No.
It's not Donald Driver. No, he has
LT actually used to catch
here,
like.
I'll go ahead and give you guys some stats Donald here. Driver I'll give Andy time to think history. Here. Yeah. LT currently has. He's not even ranked in the top 30.
In his career.
LaDainian Tomlinson has 624.
Okay.
Which is up there for a
That's a lot, back. Yeah.
Yeah. Any guess, Andy?
Well, I thought Driver, but.
No, Driver didn't really get hot until later in his career.
Yeah.
Active with 1,000 receptions.
When I say it, you guys are going to go, oh.
When you say active, you mean he's just active on a roster and he's on IR or something? Or what, did he contribute at all this year?
Absolutely.
He did. Okay. Wow.
Hang on. Don't say it.
Wait for it.
This isn't really a hint, but it's kind of a hint in a not a very good way. He's one of, in my opinion, one of the most overlooked future Hall of Fame receivers. He's really overlooked. I mean, people don't bring
Hines his Ward.
Name. Got it, Hines Ward.
Yeah,
1,002 receptions so far in his career.
Wow. There you go.
34 years old.
Today too, I think.
Good one, Luke. Good one.
Hey!
It makes when your brain has to work. It makes it fun.
Unless you have the brain of the badger.
The brain is a badger.
Thanks for tuning in, everybody. It was good to have JD here, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, JD. Again, you can go to Blogging with Scroggin, Google it. You can also Google Fansmanship and follow us at Fansmanship, at Luke's Rant.
Owen, are you out for 3 weeks now?
At AndyRue42, at Owen Main. Yes, I'm out for a little while.
Oh, man.
I'm headed to...
New Mexico, huh?
No. Well, yeah, for a little bit. I'm going to 3 places. Next week I'll be in Madison, Wisconsin,
Southern Colorado.
So I might catch. I may be able to catch a Badgers and
the Badgers.
Yeah, I might bring you guys back some Badger gear. Maybe there's some
Flula mask. Flula. Get like print out a face of Flula.
Awesome.
Do you know about the Badger?
And then I'll be in El Centro and also down in Bloomfield, New Mexico. So yes, I will be all over the map. But I will be writing
the Bermuda Triangle,
and I will continue to tweet about current events. So hopefully we'll. We'll make happen what we need to make happen and have a podcast at some
Absolutely.
Point in the middle there. And guys,
because we're committed to you 14 people.
Can we phone
there.
You in? Is that possible? To just put the phone up against
I'm working on it. Seriously, no.
Seriously, yeah. Put the phone up against
Actually,
the
I'm working
that
on a way
so
that I can.
Awesomely like, yeah. Like a wannabe ESPN. Hey, Owen. Hey, tell us what you
know.
Hey, guys, I'm here live with standing by with blah, blah, blah.
And we can put a picture of Owen up on the website, like owenmainfamilyship.com. Use that picture right there. Chuck Bartowski. That's the one we're using right there. We gotta scan that one in, old Chuck.
For sure.
Yeah.
That's so awesome.
Reporting live, Chuck Bartowski. We can just have Chuck call.
Final season of Chuck. Zach Levi, if you want to come on our podcast, please. Big Dodger fan, Zach Levi.
Oh, yeah. Man.
Good
shoot.
Idea. Let's work on that.
Yeah, get there.
All right.
All right, guys. Good job. We've enjoyed it. We hope you've enjoyed listening. Fansmanship.com podcast here on Fansmanship.com. We will see you next time.
Later.
Later on.
Thank you for listening to the Fansmanship.com podcast. For more news, opinions, and podcasts, go to www.fansmanship.com.